Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. Tonight, we're discussing Season 5, Episode 20, The Wrong Jedi. I'm Jonathan, and joining me tonight is Nathan.
Hey, everybody.
Dan.
Hello, everyone.
And Jen.
Hey, everybody.
And so, Season 5 ends with this episode, the conclusion to the arc and to the season. And I'm going to start first this time because I love this episode. I thought it was amazingly strong. It brought me through a whole range of emotions. At points, I was on the edge of my seat. At points, I was shocked. At points, I was sad. At points, I was happy. It was just tremendous. But let's hear what the other people on the panel had to say. And Nathan, give us your thoughts.
I thought it was a great episode. I mean, it really stands out musically, artistically in a lot of ways with the shot framing and such like that. Great episode. Kind of hands down one of the better ones of the series. It felt like things did wrap up a little quickly because they had one episode in which to get it wrapped up, which I guess would have been different if we'd perhaps had maybe a series with 2-hour-long episodes as opposed to 4 half-hour ones. Really, really a great episode. I would agree, emotionally touching, though really for me it was the second viewing that did that. The first viewing I'm thinking, how are they going to do this? How are they going to do this? And thinking about all the continuity ramifications of it that we'll deal with later on in the show, the second time around I really just kind of let myself go with it. Yeah, I mean, this is certainly the emotional high point or low point, whichever way you want to look at it, of the series. The high point of emotional involvement, I would say. So, awesome. Kudos to them.
Dan.
I'm right with you guys. I really enjoy this episode. It was a great finale to an arc that I really have enjoyed. Great way to wrap up the season. Honestly, if this is the way they wrap up the series, I'm happy too. We're going to get to this, I'm sure, but I feel that the end of this, if they just leave it alone and let it be done, this could be worked in very easily to current continuity with a few little speed bumps, little hiccups, little sandpaper, and looking the other way that didn't happen. We're good. And I'm very glad to have been it. Like you, Jonathan, I even found myself getting a little choked up there at the end. When Ahsoka turns her back and walks away from Maul, it's like, wow. And considering how I felt about Ahsoka 5 years ago, that's pretty awesome.
And Jen?
I'm with you guys. I felt like this was a really solid, really interesting, and great ending to this arc. And like you guys were saying, if this is the end to the series, I could be okay with that. I feel like it worked really well, and I liked the kind of almost melancholy note that it leaves off on, because I feel like that leaves me more excited for Star Wars and like seeing kind of where things go than I have been in a really long time. So I really like it. I feel like this works really well.
Well, we have a lot to cover, so let's get into the meat of the episode. It opens with Tarkin addressing the council. The Senate believes that an internal Jedi trial, which is what the council feels that they were going to do with Ahsoka, would be biased, and asked the order to expel her so she could be tried by a Republic military tribunal. Now, this was intense. I thought it was really interesting that, I mean, obviously the Republic would want Ahsoka to have a very public trial if they believed that she committed these crimes. And also we know that Tarkin and Palpatine and some of the others would want to almost show very, you know, prominent or popular Jedi fall and make that as public as possible to almost call the Jedi into question. But the fact that the council seems to go along with it shocked me. What about you guys?
Did anybody else get some like real Fate of the Jedi vibes off of this? Maybe it's just because that's the most recent EU thing I've read, but like I felt like this was just pulled straight out of the Tahiri Vela thing, where the council didn't quite dare make enough of a stink to keep her kind of internal, keep her issues internal, because it would just look that much worse for the Jedi who were already under this really critical eye. So I thought it actually worked okay. It was kind of painful to watch just because it felt like such, it's like, no, this is such a bad decision, guys, don't do it. But it made sense in the political atmosphere that they've kind of been setting up.
It may have made sense, but it almost seemed like kind of a sellout, like the Jedi sacrificed one of their own, and possibly knowingly sacrificed one of their own, to keep political points. Nathan, what did you think?
I think it was actually a little bit of both. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, we're getting closer to episode 3. The Jedi are being shown as sort of the political hot potato here. And yeah, Filoni talks even in his featurette about how the Jedi are essentially stuck in this political position of having to be willing to let her be tried by someone other than the Jedi Council for fear of the political ramifications of that and the public perception ramifications of that, even more so than politics. But it does certainly seem as though they go into this pretty much without being willing to put up a stink. Again, what can they do in 25 minutes or less? But yeah, it definitely felt like it sort of was a quick sellout of Ahsoka. On the other hand, though, I do like the fact that the way that they played this gave us that scene with the Jedi Council talking to Tarkin, then later the sequence in terms of judging Ahsoka, the Council judging Ahsoka, and rendering their decision, because we've got them rendering a decision that we know at least seems like it was very much influenced by politics. But Anakin wasn't in the room for this first conversation. So it allows him to see this as her being sold out for no reason or no faith in her, etc., etc. It's as though Anakin and Ahsoka are being separated from the true knowledge of why this is all taking place the way it is the politics behind everything. They essentially become the unwitting victims of this, and the Jedi Council is made to look even worse because it seems like they're doing this without a valid backing behind it. It reminds me really of a lot of the stuff that we see with Episode 3, where the Jedi Council is making moves that to them seem like the best move overall, but Anakin's perception of them, based on the distrust and feeling like he's been held back, totally colors his view. Well, this feels like it's feeding directly into that. It's Anakin not being given all the facts, and because of that, what he is seeing with his own eyes is not coming off in the context it should be. It's coming off way worse.
Dan, why don't you enlighten us with your thoughts?
This is the one part of this arc that bugged me a little bit, was the whole, this needs to be addressed by the Senate. The explosion killed 6 Jedi. I think this would be more of a thing that should be handled by the Jedi. Yes, a few clones were killed, and I'm not saying this to in any way slight clones, but, I mean, Separatists have killed a lot more of them. That part seems a little off to me, but I actually liked how Anakin was kind of out of the loop, so he got to react. Once again, kind of like back when Obi-Wan faked his death, Anakin's reaction kind of adds fuel to that. So it worked for me. I did get it kind of a Fate of the Jedi vibe like Jen, because that's the most recent EU that I've read too. So maybe that's why this episode worked so well for me, because I kind of went back to that.
I would say the one thing that does separate this out from Fate of the Jedi, and yes, it's interesting to see a Jedi on trial and essentially being railroaded in that sense, but Tahiri actually did the thing she was accused of. It's just that she had a change of heart since. She'd essentially redeemed herself since. That would be like having Barriss be the one on trial after she eventually somehow recants and decides to go back towards the more familiar version of the light side that we're used to. This was not someone who had done the action, was guilty, and had repented. This is someone who wasn't guilty in the first place. So it has a similar feel, but the railroading here is very different, I would say, between the two.
The thing that struck me, both in the council chamber and then later when they kind of lay judgment on Ahsoka, is that I honestly believe that some of the council members believed that she did it. Now, this is somebody who has been involved in some pretty high-stakes issues during the Clone Wars. She's been involved in a lot of things. She's been trusted with a lot of things. And yet, they're really quick to throw her to the wolves, to believe that just because she was someplace where some nanodroids happened to be, that she must be guilty. It seemed like very, I don't know, circumstantial evidence, I suppose is the right word. And there was no even motive. So I found that kind of interesting, that it was kind of like, okay, well, we're going to let her go. I'm glad that they did include that there wasn't a unanimous decision, that I'm assuming at least Obi-Wan and perhaps one or two of the other Jedi Council members didn't believe that this was the right thing, which I think kind of lends itself to that sort of dissension that we get hints of in Episode 3, even amongst the Jedi themselves when they don't have the use of the Force that they once did.
You mentioned Yoda talking about how this wasn't a unanimous decision, but it's what they're going with anyways. At that point, I got a little cranky, and that kind of made me more ready for this to be, you know, like 5 minutes before Episode 3, because I'm ready for these idiots to get Order 66, because they are bending to the will.
See, what got me, I couldn't quite tell, And of course, again, they don't have the time to really go into detail with it. I wasn't entirely sure, looking at the scene where she's in judgment, whether this was actually something where they were separating her from the Order because of potential guilt, and it was just, okay, you're gone. Or if what it seemed like it felt more like, which was, okay, the political expediency says that in order to have her tried, we have to expel her from the Order so there's no conflict of interest. But if she's found not guilty, we can just bring her back in. But it didn't seem as though, if that was the case, that they ever gave any indication that that would be possible. It was just a, you're gone. Again, them not knowing what was needed to be known. Did it seem like it was more of a, well, we must do this, but we'll bring her back type of thing, like it winds up playing out? Or just kind of seem like when you guys watched it, it's just, okay, you're gone. See ya. We're cutting you loose.
Okay, I can answer this. They find her guilty of sedition. They say that to her. They strip her of her title. They strip her of her rights. They strip her as having any responsibility or rank in the Grand Army. They believe that she's guilty, or at least that's how they present it. So no, this isn't a, oh, well, maybe if you get through this trial, we'll let you back. This is, goodbye, we're throwing you to the wolves.
Even in terms of what they might be thinking outside of what they're actively saying, like does that really jive with the end of the episode? Or is it just kind of at the end of the episode, woo, we're glad you weren't. We're sorry about that whole kicking you out thing.
We'll get to it, but the end of the episode was kind of like a, yeah, we kind of messed up there, but hey, you know what? This is a trial. This will make you a better Jedi, so come on back. The end of the episode and the way it was resolved was very much a sort of, for everybody but Anakin, a kind of a cover your butt moment.
But in that moment, I knew where they were going to go at the end. I knew once she got found not guilty, they were going to say, oh, come back. And she was going to say, I don't think so. And that was going to be her out. And that was how we were going to get Ahsoka out of the Jedi Order. I knew where they were going to go. I was still in for the ride. I still loved every second of it, but I knew that's what the path was.
If only her reason that she gives at the end fit with the rest of her experience, but we'll get to that.
So we move to Ahsoka incarcerated in a Republic cell, and Anakin and Padme come in, and Anakin reveals that Padme is going to defend her. And hey, I'm curious, when did Padme get her law degree?
The whole legal system in this kind of freaked me out. Like, just between the Padme being her representative, because apparently she's a lawyer, and I think maybe the Republic just abolished all lawyers, because I feel like there wasn't a single person in there that seemed to be a, you know, representative of law. They had, like, Palpatine in there being, like, kind of judge, and these random folks who kind of looked like they had just kind of picked and chose from the different senator molds. And then Tarkin is apparently the prosecution. What? I would never want to go on trial in the Republic.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd. I mean, I guess I could sort of buy into the Tarkin thing, because it's supposed to be a military tribunal, though generally that means it's going to be, at least in our way of looking things, you know, you've got a military judge, and you still have someone who specializes in prosecution and defense and whatnot there. I would assume that Padme would have at least some detailed legal knowledge, though, being the fact that, you know, she's been in the Senate, she's argued the case for various legal acts and so forth. I would say that her practical experience might work, even if the idea of an educational background may be a little bit lacking there. And presumably, I could buy it, because Ahsoka would want someone she knows she can trust at this point, because the people she can trust is sorely lacking. She even says in the scene that everybody, all the Jedi have abandoned her. Apparently, she's forgotten about the fact that Barrett is supposedly still her buddy. But I'd like to think that it was that they were purposely trying to use them in a way that fit their characters, rather than it being, okay, trial is now in session. We need a prosecutor and a defense attorney. You now have these character models to select from.
It could have been worse. She could have been defended by Jar Jar.
Hello, Felicates.
Anakin leaves to find Asajj Ventress, who Ahsoka believes is responsible for this. He moves into the underworld and manages to find Asajj rather quickly. They have kind of a quick battle, and Anakin is just brutal in this episode. I kind of liked it, because it really did foreshadow who he becomes, and he's definitely kind of feeling the rage. But after the duel with Asajj, and he overpowers her by literally just throwing her into the wall hard enough to crack the plaster and stonework, she reveals that she was originally going to use Ahsoka to get the bounty, but then found that she had things in common with Ahsoka, and Anakin's like, you don't have anything in common with her. And she says, well, yes, I do. I was abandoned by my master, and Ahsoka was abandoned by you and the Jedi Order. And this kind of resonates with Anakin a little bit. I thought this was a really powerful scene, and Anakin Again, I know I've talked about it before. The animation just really is able to project these emotions really, really well.
I gotta say, this scene actually had a couple of my favorite moments of the episode in it. It's not just a, you know, you have nothing in common with her. It's the whole, how dare you compare yourself. I mean, he gets extremely angry and offended by just the very notion that she would dare to compare her own experiences with Ahsoka's. He's not looking for that connection. It's basically just kind of that gut reaction of, you're a villain, keep yourself as far away from my Padawan as possible, or former Padawan, or whatever, as possible here. But what really gets it, and this is something that I was talking to a couple of others who had watched the episode, and I guess this kind of slipped by, and went back and rewatched it, at the end of that scene, when she says that, he's still got that scowl on his face, but just very briefly, as you said, it resonates with Anakin, and you get that ever so quick, maybe half a second look on his face, where his eyes kind of open more, and you're like, you realize, oh crap, he just got it. He just understood that, yeah, this is kind of what he has just done. Granted, he just beat the living crap out of her while she had nothing to defend herself with except for pipes. So yeah, he's a little over the top, but he's even still in that state able to see where maybe this whole situation is going wrong, even in terms of the way he's been acting.
We then cut from there to the beginning of the trial of Ahsoka, and Tarkin comes out and makes his opening statements where he makes it apparent that he is not only going to convince everyone that Ahsoka is guilty, he's going to seek her execution, which kind of ramped up the stakes. I guess we assume that that's what they were going to go for. Typically, treason and sedition are capital offenses that result in execution, but at the same time, it's sort of like, holy crap, you know, Ahsoka's, in my mind, still a kid. What about you guys?
There's no doubt in my mind Tarkin has wanted her dead for 2 seasons.
Kind of to piggyback on Dan, I feel like Tarkin was, like, really hateful of her from the get-go, and this is just, like, his, like, someone handed him a candy. He's just like, oh, now I can get her, and legally, too. This is the best! So I feel like he was, like, really delighted in that. I guess I'm jaded. I don't take any kind of, like, death threats or any kind of anything like that seriously anymore. Like, I just kind of even don't even register them in TV, which is really kind of sad, because, like, it's supposed to have a lot of resonance, and for some reason this is like, oh, well, she'll be fine.
You know, what gets me about it, I like the fact that Tarkin's the one who's calling for the death penalty here, in that he does have that personal stake, but we also know him, and we've seen him as a loyal servant of both Palpatine as Chancellor and as the Emperor later on. So we get this sense, I mean, I still look at this episode, and yes, it's Barriss that's the one behind it, but it still sort of feels as though as soon as this happens, it is the perfect opportunity for Palpatine to be able to rip something away from Anakin and drive him ever closer to the dark side. So it feels like no matter what was happening with Barriss, the orchestration that made this fall on Ahsoka rather than someone else, at least to start with, had to have been something that Palpatine was doing on purpose and using Tarkin to make happen. And honestly, I would not have been worried about Ahsoka's fate in this episode as far as whether or not she would live or die had it not been for a comment made by Filoni that she'd make at least take that sort of issue seriously in the future. Filoni in the featurette laid out the idea, and I think this is the first time we've heard it, that when it comes to the fate of Ahsoka, what happens to her in the end, he basically has said that Filoni wants her alive. Lucas wants her dead. And part of the setup for these episodes has been Filoni trying to get his way and give an out to the Ahsoka character where she doesn't have to die the way that apparently Lucas wants to have happen. Knowing that Lucas wants her dead would have been interesting to know that before this episode aired, because I would have been a little bit more concerned about her. Now, assuming we get season 6 with that, what X-9's talked about a different character arc for Ahsoka and her growth and such, I feel like we have to now be worried that in any future continuation of this series, she could end up dead, because what Lucas says tends to be the rule of the day.
Well, I'm going to tell you why I maybe had a different take on this and where I was kind of at times worried for Ahsoka. And as I said, I watched this episode with my kids. And watching this with my kids, my two boys, and it was different. They woke up early because they knew this was the last episode of the season of Clone Wars, and they came down on Saturday morning to watch it with me. And so we all watched it together. And when they said that, my son Jonah looks at me and goes, are they really going to kill her, Dad? And I'm like, I don't know. Remember, this series is for us, but it's also for the younger kids. And there was a lot of drama there that connected with my boys. So I think it is something that we were to take as a real possibility before the episode ended. We jump then back to the underworld where Anakin is interrogating Asajj Ventress, and she reveals that whoever attacked her before going on to confront Ahsoka has her two red lightsabers. And that kind of lays the groundwork to, I think coming into this, we all knew that Barriss was the traitor, and kind of lays the groundwork for how Anakin is going to discover that. Also, she reveals that Barriss was the only other person that had contact with Ahsoka and is the one who told them where to go and to the warehouse, the munitions warehouse where the nanodroids were found. And I know this was supposed to be a big reveal, but as I said, I think all of us came into this knowing who the traitor was, right?
Yeah, thanks, Teletoon. Just saying. Although I do like the fact that they did make sure in some of the early promos, when Anakin has Barriss's lightsaber, they purposely made it so that her lightsaber was actually green in the shots, so as not to give away who the traitor might have been when we realized we hadn't seen that scene from the trailer yet going into this finale. So, I don't know. I mean, I think they were sort of nudging us in that direction. They were trying to make it obvious enough. But for something they seemed like they were trying to make obvious, they at least went through some efforts to try to hide it from the more attentive fan community out there, which is an interesting touch.
It does show a little bit more effort on their part than we've always seen. Another thing that I liked about this is when Anakin leaves Asajj, and he does leave her, he kind of comes up close to her and whispers to her that if she's lying to him, she's dead. And that's darker than we've ever seen Anakin before, isn't it? He's never told anybody he's going to kill them, has he?
Not that blatantly. Anakin was really dipping into the dark in this entire episode, which I think is kind of where they wanted to show that the threat of losing Ahsoka could make him go, which is another reason why I feel this is a wonderful stepping stone to episode 3.
It does lend more credence to why he'd be willing to go to the dark side if he feared he was going to lose somebody as important to him as Padme.
Especially if now we realize that by episode 3, I mean, granted, Ahsoka's not dead, but in a sense, he's lost her at least for the moment as well. So it's not even just the loss of his mother, technically the loss of Qui-Gon before, though he wasn't very close to him. He was expecting him to be his mentor Jedi figure, and then being afraid of losing Padme. Now we have this extra wrinkle thrown in of, in theory, having lost Ahsoka in the relatively recent past. The idea that things are being ripped away from him over a very short 3-year period, minus Qui-Gon.
I'm really liking how they did Anakin in this. I feel like they're really tapping into the stuff that we've kind of been given already. So I love this idea that, you know, he's standing to lose something else. Like, loss is like that's his weakness. That's his total downfall. And we really see him pulling a lot of Vader stuff here. And I feel like that's perfect. I feel like that's a real great demonstration of like his character arc. And I'm really enjoying that they're holding to that and that he's going as dark as he is. I love it.
We then jump back to the trial where Padme is attempting to defend Ahsoka and calling into question all those things that I think we've discussed previously is, well, why would Ahsoka choke Leta in a way that only a Jedi could do? And she obviously is trying to insert sort of that reasonable doubt, and nobody's really buying it. I think walking into that, as Ahsoka said, walking into that courtroom, she was already guilty.
It's interesting, there are certain questions they don't ask that we've been asking, though. How did someone get in there and actually kill Leta? You know, we should be looking for the person who actually did it, who somehow was behind the scenes. How was it that she was actually released? How did the person get in there who killed all those clones? Where is the security footage of any of this stuff? That's the one gaping hole in this arc that really bothers me still, because we still have no explanation of, okay, where was Barriss to be able to force choke Leta when she apparently did it? How did she get inside and manage to go through and kill the clones and leave the little card and everything like that? They gloss over that. We just have to assume, well, it's Barriss. We say she did it, so she must have found a way to do it. But that still leaves that how on earth did this happen kind of thing that at least slightly weakens what is otherwise an amazing arc. It may take it from a 10 to a 9.5. I mean, it's not that much of a hole, but I was hoping that that kind of stuff would be brought up within here as a way of saying, you don't have all the evidence. This might be something where they're trying to stack evidence against Ahsoka, so please hear us out. But it wasn't there, whether for time or because they just didn't want to deal with those potential plot issues that they created for themselves.
Well, the episode kind of cut very rapidly between the trial and Anakin trying to pursue a lead, it made me think that this trial went really, really quick for something as serious and as intense as what Ahsoka is being accused of. The trial seems to move rather quickly. Now, kind of addressing what you're saying, Nathan, the other thing that kind of made me think on the second watching, not on the first, was we all kind of wondered if Palpatine was involved in this somehow, and maybe even Tarkin was involved in what happened. But we find out through the course of this episode that he had nothing to do with it, that he is just capitalizing on someone else's plot. Again, showing that what a masterful manipulator and opportunist Palpatine really is.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised at all if we'd gotten a scene that in some way showed that this was orchestrated by Palpatine, and possibly even Tarkin being in on it. I mean, I would not have been surprised at all to find out it's Tarkin that erased the audio. It's, you know, it's Tarkin the reason why there's giant holes in this defense, and this was a little something him and Palpatine had going on the side to kind of get the ball rolling on Order 66.
I'm hopeful that next season, assuming there is a next season, that we might actually get a scene between Anakin and Palpatine talking about Ahsoka being gone, and Palpatine playing into that whole quasi-fatherly role that he plays, that we see him use so brilliantly to manipulate Anakin throughout, in Attack of the Clones to a degree, but especially in Revenge of the Sith. The whole idea of, you know, well, she's gone, you know you can talk to me, just stuff that playing on the idea that the Jedi did not Ahsoka doesn't mean that they have distrust in him as well. I mean, just to be able to play up on that, I would not put it past them to actually include something like that. I know sometimes we say that they don't try to play off of things as much in future episodes as we would like, but it seems like they spent so much time setting this up and so much effort to really build up this feeling behind Anakin. It's almost more of an Anakin episode than an Ahsoka episode in some ways for me. That's something that they might wind up bringing back in. They'd have to find a way to work it into a story logically, but I think that we may not have seen the last of not just the repercussions of this arc, but more of the details of the arc, because, you know, unless they just decide to make him let go, this is not something I would imagine Anakin is just going to let go.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where they go with this with Anakin and Palpatine, because this is a very different sort of loss than Anakin's ever kind of had to deal with. Every other loss has been, like, very definite, just, you know, dead, gone, you're done. Whereas he could kind of wheedle and, like, poke and bother and whine and hopefully make Ahsoka change her mind in this case almost, or it's not finite, it's not definite at this point. So I would love to see how, if that like bothers him more, if that kind of sits badly with him and he ends up talking more to Palpatine about this. I feel like that's a really interesting window into kind of his continuous slide more towards the dark side.
Well, I think it obviously can fit into that, because who is responsible for Ahsoka walking away? It's not Palpatine. It's not even Tarkin. It's the Jedi Council. It's the Jedi Council that didn't trust her. It's the Jedi Council that kicked her out of the Order and refused to believe in her or in him. This was a wedge driven very deeply between Anakin and the Jedi, which, again, as I said, even if Palpatine didn't orchestrate this, he's certainly going to capitalize on it.
I was recently, I did a spot for a sequel cast. And we were discussing the whole issue of Revenge of the Sith and how, to me, it was always enhanced by having read Matthew Stover's novel, because, among other things, you have this instance in there where, in trying to save Padme, Anakin learns that there is certain knowledge in the Jedi archives that can only be accessed by a master. And in there might be a secret to finding a way to help her. So when he is not granted the rank of master upon being put on the council, that's just more frustrating and drives that wedge. And to me, that always gave that extra oomph to why Anakin would be willing to switch allegiances in the midst of Revenge of the Sith. And I always felt like the film was a little bit weaker for not having something like that in there, because it felt like it went fairly quickly. I think with this arc, they've finally given us something of an equivalent to that type of depth of Anakin's frustration over the way the council has been acting that I think somewhat justifies what we see now in Revenge of the Sith. It didn't seem like anything else we saw in this series, and really even in the pre-Clone Wars cartoon series EU version of the Clone Wars. There was never really anything big enough to really justify it outside of them standing in the way of saving Padme. But to have them here be a linchpin in being able to alienate him from Ahsoka, even if she did wind up being found innocent in the end, that I think is finally what we needed to make a lot of the naysayers who say, nope, Revenge of the Sith just happens too fast, to make them say, you know what? Okay, we get it now. We're good. And maybe remove some of those criticisms.
We move then to Anakin visiting Barriss's quarters and confronting her about her interactions with Ahsoka during Ahsoka being on the run. And Barriss freely admits communicating with her. Anakin decides to sort of test his theory and his belief and forces her to reveal that she has Asajj's lightsabers. Now, I thought this was pretty daring. If Asajj's lightsabers hadn't been there, I'm thinking he would have cut her in half.
Oh, I don't know. I think Anakin has enough saber control. He could have stopped it just enough to let her feel the heat, but not quite cut her.
I liked, though, how he, after she reveals herself in their dueling, and he's like, you should have gotten rid of them. And she gets this gleam in her eye, and she goes, oh, I don't know. I think they kind of suit me. Again, it's those just little details in the voice work and the animation that just really, really just comes alive. How did this confrontation feel to you guys? Because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very strong sort of extended duel between the two. And I liked how when the Jedi Protectors or the Jedi Enforcers got involved and how they had to move around the temple and then onto the grounds. What did you guys think?
This was actually a part I kind of disliked because at the time I was still on the fence about Barriss, and the fact that line that you actually just commented on where she notes that the red lightsabers kind of suit her, that actually put me kind of in a really negative mind space, just because, and especially since it conflicts later with how she explains herself. So I'm really curious as to what her actual motive was. Like, were they trying to have her go to the dark side, or is she really just very jaded about how the Jedi Order has become kind of a political entity as opposed to their original kind of glory? So I was wanting this to go really well because I was waiting to be sold on how it could be Barriss, but I felt like this particular scene didn't really work for me.
I like how Anakin's willing to go sort of over the top in order to prove that it's her. He doesn't have a whole lot of time at this point, so he's willing to basically try to cut her down so that she would pull out the lightsabers, which maybe he at that point had a sense were in there. I mean, we know lightsabers to a degree have some level of force sensitivity, or be able to sense to the force at least somewhat, depending on which source you're looking at. But I would agree with Jen. That was the thing that really got me about the scene, was it makes you wonder if they're trying to give you a sense that all that highfalutin talk she gives at the end is really undermined by the fact that that's what she says. But there's more to it than that, that there is the dark side in this character. Because it either feels like it was a clumsy juxtaposition of the two things, where she seems as though she's dark, and then she's railing against how she's sort of more pure than the Jedi Order themselves even are in motives, or it was purposely there. Don't get the sense in the end that somehow she was right. Although, one of the ways that it was discussed in some of the pre-release stuff, and that Dave Filoni apparently talked about at that premiere event, was the idea that part of why Ahsoka leaves is because she essentially agrees that what Barriss has said is true. It's just that she's not quite sure what to make of it, and Barriss did it the wrong way. But we get none of that feeling from the stuff that we actually see in the episode. Instead, what we get is this odd Barriss undermining her own words later on. I'm wondering whether that was Filoni just kind of talking off the cuff and what he expects of them, whether there's something that was cut from the episodes we'll later get on a director's cut or something, or what, because it seems as though that didn't play out quite the way that it was originally presented by Filoni himself.
Is this that different, though, from the Umbara arc, and when we find that Krell feels that the, as I remember that episode, that the Jedi have kind of strayed from what the Order intended, and that he was changing allegiances and changing sides because he didn't feel that the Republic was worth defending anymore? Is that different than what Barriss has done? Because she's making her point by killing Jedi. She essentially is, in her own way, turning her back on the Jedi Order. And as we know, a lot of times when Jedi turn away from the light, they turn dark.
I don't see that much of a coinciding of their motives. I mean, what Pong Krell was talking about was this idea that a new power is rising. I have foreseen it. And this idea that he wants to be on the winning side because the Jedi are weak. So he is going to do what he's doing on the dark side as a way of getting Dooku's attention to be his new apprentice, thinking that Dooku is the Sith master out there. In this case, Barriss at least in what she claims is her motive, is becoming disillusioned with what the Jedi is doing and trying essentially to stop it. She's more the equivalent of almost a Weather Underground type of individual. If you want to take American history, someone who is so disgruntled with the system that they try to do something to show the system is wrong, but in doing so, go far afield in that and wind up going into acts of aggression and violence themselves. And I didn't see that type of coinciding here. I would say she feels a lot more like what we get with Dooku, though. The idea that Dooku was slowly growing disillusioned with the Jedi, especially after the death of Qui-Gon, and wound up leaving the Order. And it is as he leaves the Order that he winds up falling into the thrall of Palpatine and becomes Darth Tyrannus. It seems much more in line with him, I think, than Krell. Krell was just, you know, out for power for himself, it seemed like.
Did anybody get a Luke Skywalker Return of the Jedi feel out of Anakin there right at the end of that fight when he was hammering away on Barriss?
I definitely thought that it was that he was tapping into the rage. Even how he ultimately ends the fight by catching her midair and just slamming her into that tree and just pinning her there. You mean, you almost think he's just going to snap her neck.
It feels like Anakin's thing in this episode. I mean, we know that he's supposed to be this uber powerful Jedi. And sometimes we don't necessarily see that in the scenes. Almost makes me feel like they're trying to portray him as having held back most of the time. Because it seems like both of these fights, the one he has with Barriss and the one he has with Asajj, it's fight, fight, fight. Okay, you know what? Screw it. I'm done with this. Boom! And he grabs them and slams them back into the wall or starts choking them and such. Where it's sort of a, you know what? I can play fair and I'll play violent in playing fair. But you know what? I don't have time for this crap. And then he pulls the heavier dark side and just completely overpowers them in a way that they cannot escape. Hopefully it's that, not just, you know, convenience of an easy way to end the fights.
The writer's sitting around, hey, this guy's been a Jedi for 5 years and we haven't had him do that stuff.
He's force choked before.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, the whole catching Barriss in the air, she's jumping at him and then slamming her back. And I mean, how many people have fallen in front of him and we've said, why didn't he use the force to catch them? Stuff like that. Or why didn't you use the force to, you know, grab that whatever it was before it fell over the cliff into nothing?
Barriss and Asajj both just got Tartakovskis. He pulled that overpowered Jedi thing on him.
Well, it works. So Anakin brings Barriss to the trial just as they're about to read judgment and forces her to confess to what she's done. And she makes this speech that the Jedi have turned their back on their ideals. They've become puppets and that the Republic is not worth saving. And they take her away and Ahsoka is cleared. But where you would think that she'd be excited, she looks very sad.
What strikes me about this confession really is that nobody in that room, at least as far as the Jedi Masters are concerned, are going to necessarily go along with Barriss. They're too much set in their own mindsets. Of course they're not going to say, golly, you're right, we really are leaning towards the dark side, we gotta fix this. And of course, probably most of the observers in there already have their minds made up on the issue, or at least many of them would. What strikes me on this, and they don't tend to make much of a big deal about this, is if this really is a show trial, then this is being broadcast. And if that's the case, then I think Barriss really gets the final blow here. Because by making her little speech upon confessing, she, in theory, probably has managed to add even more to that anti-Jedi sentiment that's out there in the Republic that they built up back earlier in this arc. So it kind of feels as though, in a lot of ways, the ending here is not that the good guys won so much as the good guys managed to just survive, and the bad guys have pretty much gotten what they wanted, very much like, I guess, we'd expect with, say, Revenge of the Sith or Empire Strikes Back.
So then we cut to the Jedi Council, where the council members are offering Ahsoka her position back in the Jedi Order. And I think it was kind of, as I said earlier, a CYA moment where Mace Windu is like, well, this was truly your trial and it's going to make you a better Jedi. And actually, at one point, I thought they were actually going to try to knight her right there and say, well, you've come through your trial, so now we feel that you're a knight. And they all compliment Ahsoka, but you could see that she's not really buying it. She crosses her arms, and she's kind of giving him this look like, I don't belong here anymore. What did you guys get out of that interaction and the council trying to almost, like, strangely almost apologize?
That was the most fumbling bunch of idiots. That was, yeah, you're completely right. That was a complete CYA moment. And I just don't like that Ahsoka didn't let them take all the blame. Oh, it's not only you. I don't trust myself now. No, they're the idiots who didn't trust you. I would have been completely all right if Ahsoka had come back with, yes, maybe you should all pull your heads firmly out of your butts and start looking around for the real criminals rather than being so ready to turn on your own. Or maybe that you're so ready to turn on your own is your problem and you guys should watch yourselves, and then walked away.
Or even some kind of little comment like, you know what? What Barriss did may have been wrong, but she wasn't wrong about the way the Jedi have fallen from their paths. Dan called them a fumbling bunch of idiots. It might be redundant to call them, in this case, they basically become politicians. What is a politician going to do? Unless they are caught, they generally don't actually say, this is my fault. There are no mea culpas, really, in modern politics. Instead, it's, well, see, what I meant to say was, and it's all this maneuvering around to try to come out still smelling like roses when really you're soiled with what fertilizes them. And that's basically what they did, which proves the point that was made by Barriss to some degree. And it just highlights what we saw back in the first council scene in this episode, that the Jedi are, at least the Jedi Council, they're acting like politicians, not peacekeepers, not moral leaders. They're going with what makes them look best in the long run. And in this case, I don't think anybody in the room is buying the line of bull. Though I was with Jonathan thinking that the idea was that if she did come back, they were looking to knight her. I can't imagine them bringing up the trials and the idea that this was her trial and the Force works in mysterious ways and such, and not have that be part of the discussion. I'm assuming that they just sort of implied it and expected us to just know that that was there, because otherwise why bring up the trial angle anyway?
See, I love that she doesn't berate them, that she doesn't go all high and mighty or like have any kind of moral high ground. I love that she's completely uncertain and unsure, because she's been basically indoctrinated into this culture, this group of the Jedi, since she can probably remember. It's kind of like a family, like if you've ever had a family member who you really looked up to and find out they, you know, had some issue that kind of colors your feelings towards them, and you can't undo that. You know, she found out that Santa Claus wasn't real. That kind of thing, like that you can't go back, and it completely colors everything you've experienced up until then. And so I love that. I love that she's taking a step back going, I don't know what I can trust right now. Everything I thought that was true has been brought into question. Her first instinct isn't to just sit there and scream and wail. It's to be intelligent about it, take a step back and just remove herself from this arena where she doesn't feel she can be objective anymore.
I guess where she and Barriss, I think, in a lot of ways, part ways in the way that they think about the problems that the Jedi Order have, because, you know, there's multiple options of how you deal with it. If you think a system is not working or a system is corrupt, you try to change it from the inside, you try to destroy it, you try to change it from the outside, or you remove yourself from the system so that you are not being hampered by it until you can find what is the right path. And she's taking what is essentially here the moral high ground and the more, as Jen said, the objective route, which is to say, I'm not going to try to stay and fix things. I'm not going to try to stay in a place I'm not feeling welcome. But at the same time, I'm not going to rail against it the way that Barriss did. But I must remove myself from this flawed system because now I see the crack. The Emperor has no clothes, so to speak.
Ahsoka walks out of the temple and Anakin chases after her. And you get the sense that Obi-Wan wants to go too, but I believe it's Plo Koon who kind of holds him back. Anakin catches up with Ahsoka on the steps of the temple, and probably the most emotional moment that I can think of in Clone Wars occurs. And what's great, I didn't notice this till the second viewing, is that during that exchange there, she doesn't call him master. In the council chamber, she still referred to him as master. Here she calls him Anakin. I know that she's called him Anakin before, but there it just kind of resonated that she was separating herself in her own mind from the Jedi, that she was no longer one of them. And as no longer being a Jedi, she no longer calls him master. She says, if they don't trust me, how can I trust myself? But what I read is, if they don't trust me, how can I trust them? And says that she needs to find her own path without them and without Anakin. Anakin goes, well, I know what it's like to want to leave the Order. And Ahsoka goes, I know. I don't have a question here, but does anybody have a question that she knows about Anakin and Padme?
Oh, I jumped on my couch and yelled, she knows. Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. It is plain as day.
Yeah, to me, that was, I mentioned earlier how in the Asajj scene, there were a couple of my favorite scenes of the episode. It's that line. It's the I know and the look on Anakin's face when she says it that are my single favorite moment in this episode. Because we kept saying, how blind must these people be, especially Ahsoka? How blind must she be? Well, no, she's not. She sees it, But she's respectfully kept her mouth shut at this point. But it gives her that understanding. And granted, it does bother me the idea of, you know, if the council didn't trust me, how can I trust myself? It does seem like she's questioning herself when really she's the only one who believed the truth for that entire time, that she was innocent and that she would somehow be vindicated perhaps in the end. So saying that she can't trust herself's a little weird, although if you kind of take it in the broader context, her best friend has now betrayed her. It seems as though the Jedi Council has turned against her. The Republic has betrayed her. So yeah, in that sense, it makes sense for her to say she can't trust herself, because in a sense, she can't trust the world around her and the things she used to trust. But to say she can't trust herself just in general seems kind of a pat way of saying it that almost feels wrong when she says it. But a great scene, a great use of the orchestral music, but that the I know, I mean, that has got to go down in Star Wars history with Han Solo's I know in The Empire Strikes Back as one of the most subtle phrases, the smallest phrases with the biggest emotional impact in the entire series. I was totally cool on my first viewing watching this because I'm trying to figure out where things are going. My second viewing is when I'm getting a little bit emotional seeing the ending there, and it's the I know moment that had me just like chills. That to me was that over-the-top impact where someone who knows you better than you realize is now walking away, Anakin.
You know, Nathan, you touched on two things. One, the music and the orchestrations in this episode, throughout this episode, were just first rate. It was unique, but yet there were very evident cues from the films in the music, which I just thought was amazing. And the way that it ended, I felt very much like I did the first time I saw Revenge of the Sith, the end of Revenge of the Sith, where you kind of just, you get this emotional ball. And I'll admit it, I got a little teary watching this because it was just so, it just grabbed me. And it was it's just amazing. And I will kind of echo what Dan said earlier. If this is where they choose to leave Clone Wars, I'm okay with it. I don't even see how you could even come back from this next season. If there is a next season, I don't know how they would pick up from this point.
And other than their need to not let anything not go out there at some point, and they're saying that they've got bits and pieces of season 6 done, they don't need to. It's great. You could wedge in, because everything's got to work somewhere, and we can't just let things go away and say that didn't really happen. You could wedge in, what was it, season 3, part 3, whatever it was, of the micro series, where they were before episode 3. Fits perfect. Ahsoka's not there. There you go. On we go. But I'm with you, Jonathan. The musical cues in this episode, great. Final number, ending it with that orchestral piece, not with the usual Clone Wars ending credit music. Pure, unadulterated genius.
This episode has certainly gotten the Star Wars community talking. And as we predicted, this has some continuity impact. So Nathan, why don't you take us down to Continuity Corner?
All right. Well, yeah, it's actually kind of odd that of all the different things that could be controversial about this episode, it's not the fate of Ahsoka that got people riled. It's the Barriss Offee as a traitor thing, because she doesn't appear much in the EU of this era, not nearly as much as one might think, but she does get basically her own 2-book and 1 short story series entitled The MedStar Duology. And in that, she goes on a mission where she winds up eventually being knighted at the end. It acts essentially as her Jedi trial. And it was originally set 2 years after Attack of the Clones, 1 year prior to Revenge of the Sith. And then she also appears in a web strip that appeared on StarWars.com's hyperspace section called Reversal of Fortune, which was the beginning of the Evasive Action web strip series, in which we see her fighting, leading all the way up to Order 66 on Felucia, and then see her death on Felucia, which is something that was originally cut from Revenge of the Sith that did appear in the comic adaptation of the film. Now, questions come down to things like, okay, is she a Padawan at this point? How old is she supposed to be? What about this story in which she apparently dies? Because that's the impetus for what happens with her own Padawan, Zonder, in the rest of Evasive Action. Do the MedStar books still take place? If those are gone, they have extreme ramifications for what happens in the Coruscant Knights novels and the recent novel, The Last Jedi. What all are we to make of this? I've emailed Leland Chi as we were gearing up for this episode, and he made some comments to me through that, along with on his Facebook page under Keeper of the Holocron. And what I can tell you is that there is no definite answer yet as to how this is all going to be dealt with as far as what the heck is going on with Barriss. He did say that there is a possibility they may have to see her age retconned somehow, but if that were to happen to make her more of a contemporary of Ahsoka than Anakin, that leaves the question of, well, what do you do about the approaching storm and some other stories in which she appeared to be Anakin's age back that were produced around the time of Attack of the Clones? But we do still have the issue where, thanks to the MedStar book, she was at least a Padawan for a while during the Clone Wars. She didn't wind up being knighted until later on in the Clone Wars, so maybe they could still just say, well, she's sort of an extended time as a Padawan. Anakin just got a chance to get promoted a little bit earlier than one might have expected. What Leland has basically said is that they're going to wait and kind of make decisions as they go. Nothing is concrete yet. The original thing that was suggested for a while that they seem to be leaning towards when it came to the Clone Wars cartoon series was to take the story Dreadnoughts of Rendili, which is right after Anakin gets knighted and gets his scar, and just kind of part the waters. Scoot the stuff before it closer to the film, scoot the stuff after it closer to the other film, and plop the Clone Wars in the middle. They seem like they're not going to be taking that approach now, and now it's sort of a picking and choosing what goes where. That being the case, that allows them, and something that Leland has suggested, to simply say, well, the MedStar books, they take place prior to the events of this arc, whether it's between the first time period of the Clone Wars cartoon series and the second part, sort of in that time jump area we saw back in season 3 that shifted the character models, or whether they just say it's before all the Clone Wars stuff, they certainly could. He points out that nothing in this arc flat out says that Barriss is a Padawan, and we don't see Luminara. So there's a possibility she could even be knighted still in the MedStar books and still be okay with being in this arc to do what she does. So the MedStar stuff appears to be safe, relatively speaking. As for what to do about evasive action, that's the one that's still very much up in the air. Whether it's all stricken or something gets done to change it. Remember when Even Peel died, they simply changed the opening of Coruscant Nights to say that, yeah, the book says it's Even Peel, but it's actually a different Lannic Jedi who's in this story. There is no definite plan for what to do about Barriss in Reversal of Fortune leading into evasive action, but they could very well just do the same thing. Well, it's some other Jedi. The records are wrong. They say it's Barriss when it's really not supposed to be. So from a continuity standpoint, this could have been a nuke as far as Barriss is concerned, and it seems as though there are concerted efforts being made right now to try to make it all still fit, or most of it, with the only thing really feeling like it's in doubt at the moment being Reversal of Fortune. And certainly Barriss will not die during Order 66, as it suggests there. He does say that he does not see the possibility of retconning and saying that Barriss somehow rejoins the Jedi Order. He says that would essentially be something that goes against Lucas's intention, and they're not going to do that. So at this point, that is off the table, apparently, as an option. But beyond that, you know, who knows how it's going to wind up turning out. He even joked, and I must emphasize here, joked, this is not to be taken seriously, joked that maybe it wasn't even Barriss doing it at all. Maybe it was the after effects of the brain worms that led her in this direction. And it's good that they're able to joke around about it, but I don't think we're actually going to see a firm answer on this until probably after the Clone Wars cartoon series itself is over and we get the answer to how everything else fits in. I got a feeling we'll get a big info dump at that point, and until then, it's all going to be very vague with a lot of questions still hanging in the air. But at least it does seem like there is some work being done on it, even if it's not anything that's pinned down yet.
All right, thank you, Nathan. And now let's hear what some of our listeners had to say about this episode and the conclusion of the season.
Well, this is Ryan calling from Salt Lake City, Utah, wanting to talk about the season 5 ending of the Clone Wars. And I must say, I'm pretty irritated with the Jedi Council. I never really liked how Yoda was depicted in the Clone Wars anyway, but it just kind of seemed like the Council, they just didn't have it together. You know, they didn't back up Ahsoka in any way to me. And it was really irritating to see them just, it seemed like they were just kind of judging her a lot. I mean, I know that's what they were supposed to be doing, but it was, I just have no faith in them. Yoda especially, like, just, I don't know, he just doesn't seem like the wise Jedi Master that I've come to know. And it's hard to sit and watch, you know, like, they have no idea what's going on, it seems like. They can't get their crap together, and it's kind of annoying, really. I'm a little disappointed. I really thought that they would back up Ahsoka, and, you know, I mean, to kick her off the Jedi Order, I mean, just kind of, you know, kind of hit me in the gut. I'm like, wow, really, I really can't believe they're gonna do this to this younger Jedi, you know, and I mean, the evidence, yeah, I can see how it can be a little bit overwhelming, but I mean, you know, what's her motives here? I didn't understand the Council's decision, and just really disappointed. I've never really liked the way Yoda has been depicted in the Clone Wars anyway. Just, to me, doesn't really seem like that wise Jedi Master that I've come to know and love in the movies. But Anakin, I have a new fond respect for Anakin. He stood by her. To me, he did exactly what I thought the whole entire Jedi Council should have been doing. Just digging, and, you know, I mean, instead of just listening to Tarkin and just kind of looking at all this, you know, this evidence against Ahsoka, they really should have been out there fighting for her. And I'm really am just disappointed in Jedi Council. It kind of hurt to see it, but. Well, like I said, Anakin, you know, I love the way he fought for her and stuck up for her. And, you know, it almost makes his fall to the dark side just that much better, if I may. I mean, it's just to see how disappointed he is in the Jedi Council and the Jedi Order itself. It's making it a little bit easier for me to see why he slid to the dark side. I'd like to hear what everybody else has to say. Really annoyed at the Council in this one. I wish I would have seen more fight out of him, but... Hey, it was still a great episode. I was really excited to see, you know, this last arc. It really had me on the edge of my seat, and I'm excited to see what everybody else has to say. Thank you.
I think he just kind of hit, and I'm not sure if he's meaning to, with one of the things that did kind of leave me scratching my head a little bit about the Asajj scene, wherein he does say that Anakin pretty much stood by her. And for the most part, he did stand by her throughout, except a little bit during that chase, and I guess the third part of this arc. And yet, when we see that scene with Asajj and Anakin, she says, you know, you've abandoned her just like my master abandoned me. And Anakin has that reaction, of course, to the idea that she feels at least like he's abandoned her. But it really didn't seem as though that actually fit the actions of Anakin. Yes, he helped lead the chase, but did he really abandon her? That seemed to not necessarily fit what we saw in the episode. But then we did get to see it from his side and hers, and maybe just seeing it from her side would have made it feel like that. Even in the council chamber, he says, you know, that he's railing at them, you know, this is just a formality and all. He certainly seems like he's stuck on her side.
But I think he perceives that he failed her. He perceives that he didn't do enough to protect her, that he didn't do enough to save her from this fate. And so, I mean, we know that Anakin is, despite all his bravado, the character of Anakin is a very insecure character. He questions himself constantly and is very ruled by his fear. And I think this is another example of that.
See, I don't even know that Anakin necessarily entirely looked at it like that, but maybe as a reflection on his masterhood. I mean, his first time out with a bright, shiny apprentice, and in the end, she ends up getting railroaded for sedition and treason. I mean, that's going to look bad on him.
Hi, it's Travis, and first time calling in. Just got done with the last episode of The Clone Wars, the season finale, and just want to say how surprised I am about how they went about getting rid of Ahsoka, possibly. Wondering how it's going to turn out, if we're going to see her in later episodes, or if this is really the end, and maybe not exactly how I wanted to see it, but, you know, maybe we'll finally get some closure with what's going on with her. But overall, I think I like this arc a lot. Episodes were pretty strong, and I don't know, I'm excited about season 6 to see what happens and if we'll ever see Ahsoka again. Thank you.
I agree with this caller. This is not how I expected to see Ahsoka go out. 2 seasons ago, this isn't how I wanted to see Ahsoka go out. For the record, I have always thought that they were going to have Ahsoka and Barriss, Thelma and Louise off a cliff when Order 66 started, and that was going to be their out. This caught me off guard, but it caught me off guard in a way that I like, and I find myself okay with it. I find myself, you know, go Ahsoka. I'm on Ahsoka's side of this. I think that she did the right thing here, and even though I know there are purists, she's never around, she's not around anything else, I'm okay with that. You know, it's all right for a character to walk away from the main storyline of Star Wars and never have to show their face in another EU novel. The big galaxy, somebody can disappear in it very easily. Ahsoka played her part. She can move away now.
It reminds me of the, there's an image that showed up on Facebook on Saturday after this aired. It's a screenshot of Ahsoka walking away into the sunset. And with it, there's a balloon of dialogue for her in which it says, yeah, good luck with Order 66, guys. She can now leave and be the one who makes it out. She's there for later stories, but I would agree. I know this kind of goes against the timeliner in me and such, but Dan's right. You don't have to bring the character back. I can't imagine them doing a season 6 without Ahsoka, especially after the stuff that the voice actresses talked about, but you could almost have a season 6 with no Ahsoka at this point and have it make sense and not feel entirely jarring. It would feel different, but it certainly wouldn't feel entirely jarring because they gave her such a brilliant exit.
Hi, Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Anthony, and I'm calling in on the latest Clone Wars episode. Wow, this is a great finale to such a great arc. It was everything I hoped it would be. Although I was kind of waiting for Ahsoka to vouch for Asajj like she promised she would when she was talking to the Jedi Council at the end. I wonder if that'll play into anything in the next episode, in the next season. Also, Mace called it her great trial when they were talking to her at the end. And they were talking about knighthood. Does that mean they were asking her to come back and they would make her a Jedi Knight? I wasn't really sure about what they were saying there. Because Anakin was giving her back her Padawan braid. Was that for her to put back on, or was that just for her to keep? I don't know. But like I said last time I called, oh, the music was so awesome. I'm just still waiting for a soundtrack. I really hope they come out with a new one. And they come out with one. And here's my sister, Alina.
Hi, this was a great episode, though I am sad that Ahsoka did not come back to the Jedi Order. I've always liked Ahsoka, so I am worried about what will happen to her next. Thanks, bye.
I think he brings up a really interesting idea about Asajj Ventress and how Ahsoka doesn't really try to follow through with her deal. I didn't really expect her to, especially since she probably just was like throwing it out there, but it is kind of an interesting thought. Like, you know, she was really kind of supposed to do that, and maybe she just didn't. After that, she didn't think anybody would want to be involved with the Jedi, but I thought that was an interesting little loose end that I didn't even notice, and that's usually something that I pick up on a lot.
I actually found myself wondering if Ahsoka and Asajj are going to reconnect after Ahsoka leaves the temple, because, I mean, Ahsoka leaves with just the clothes on her back. She has no resources, she has no funds, she has no way that I could see to get off the planet or even to get her next meal. It would be logical that these two individuals who have both been sort of cast out by the respective orders might find each other.
Hi, everyone. This is Dominic, Wolf General on the forums. And first off, I'd like to thank Ashley X9 for such a wonderful performance. That was really, that was a heartfelt performance at the very end when Ahsoka leaves the Jedi Order. And that was a very nice conclusion. Second off, as I know, Disney now owns the rights to Star Wars, so I don't know what's the future for this series and if it's even going to be on Cartoon Network next year or even if the series is going to be on next year. So I'm glad they ended the Ahsoka storyline, because if they decide to cancel the series right now, I would actually be a lot less mad, because we finally got a sort of conclusion for the main character of this entire series. Third, I just want to know how the Barriss thing is going to affect the main continuity, because as we see in the episode 3 deleted scenes, Barriss is actually on Felucia and she gets killed, and I want to know if this changes anything, because I'm not sure if we've heard from Barriss any time during the Jedi Purge. Maybe Nathan can go through that in Continuity Corner. And last, about Anakin, I kind of get it now. I kind of get why he's so fed up with the Council. And I'm kind of fed up with the Council, too, because they kind of got rid of Ahsoka after 5 seasons. And because of that, when I watch episode 3, I'm kind of rooting for Darth Vader. I get it. I want to kill the Council, too. They're awful people. So that's all my thoughts. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I find it interesting that when you jump back to 2008 and you look at everybody's reaction to Ahsoka initially, and Dan can speak to this, it was not very positive on the whole. But now everybody seems to be really invested in this character and her future and her fate. And everyone is really, I think, in universe upset with the treatment that she got from the Council. It's an interesting change, wouldn't you say?
Decidedly so, but it does show how the Council has gotten to this point. In the movie, they tell us how they're losing touch with their ability to sense things in the Force, and they're becoming more, they don't say that, but you sense that they're becoming more cosmopolitan, more kind of leaning towards how the Senate will feel about, or how the public will take things, and less about the guidance of the Force. So, you know, like that caller, and like you said, Jonathan, I mean, by the end of this, I'm ready for episode 3. These guys need an Order 66 to kind of clear the field.
Hello, RFRN. This is Jedi Parker from the forums. I just finished watching the season finale of Clone Wars, and I am just absolutely pleased with the way that arc was ended. I thought it was beautiful. I thought that it was an absolutely amazing story for Ahsoka, and I did like the fact that they kept it open. In the event they wanted to bring her back in some other season or maybe in some other way, I was never an Ahsoka hater. I always liked the idea of Ahsoka from the very beginning, even if I didn't like the way the character was necessarily written. So I was quite pleased to see that sort of character growth in Ahsoka and her relationships with Anakin and the Jedi. And absolutely brilliant from the animation to the writing to Ashley's performance. So good job, and what a way to end, I think, an absolutely solid season, save for that unfortunate droid arc. So thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
I mean, he kind of repeated everything we said already. Like, I feel like it's just a really solid season, a really solid arc, a really solid end to the season. And I think he kind of is repeating all of our sentiments where we're pretty okay with if it just ends here. We could be okay with that. And I agree with him.
Kind of begs the question to me, I guess this episode should have felt like it ended on a cliffhanger with her walking away in a sense, not knowing where she's going, but I don't think any of us viewed it feeling like at the end there was anything of a cliffhanger to it. It felt so much more like a conclusion that the question of what happens to her almost feels like the next step in a new story rather than being a dangling thread. And I'm not sure that that's something that we would have felt had this not been a character built up for so long. Otherwise, it would have just been, okay, what's next? And, gee, I don't know if they're going to address that in the next episode of the first episode of season 6. Instead, it's, oh, nice conclusion with unanswered question.
Hi, guys. This is Mitch Halleck. I just watched the final episode of season 5, Clone Wars, and I have to say, it's a decent ending. You know what? 5 years is a long time for any show, and overall, the series has been hit or miss, mostly on the hit side, but there's been occasions, particularly this last season, where I'd like to forget I saw some of it, but it wrapped up the Ahsoka Anakin storyline quite well, I thought, and left the door wide open for the character return, possibly in the future, maybe even in the new Disney episode 7, 8, and 9. That would be a great way to tie the prequels, the Clone Wars, the original trilogy all together. The only thing I didn't like this season was, we don't know what happened with the fate of Darth Maul. That little cliffhanger bugged me somewhat more than I would think it would. But who knows, maybe he comes back in episode 7, 8, and 9 as the new leader of the Sith and Ahsoka's his apprentice. It's crazy, but it just might work. But overall, I think The Clone Wars was a fantastic series. It showcased some of the finest animators, voice talent, and writers in the industry today. And I'm happy we had it. And if it doesn't come back for season 6, that's not so bad. It's not too long to wait until 2015 till we see Star Wars back on the big screen. Anyway, keep up the great show, guys. You know I listen to all your programs and enjoy every minute of it. Take care.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody for calling in. And don't worry, this isn't the last you're going to hear about season 5 from the RFRN crew. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have our season roundup show where we're going to discuss all the issues, all the maybe leftover story arcs, the highs, the lows, the likes, the dislikes, and we hope you'll all join us then. But for tonight, I'd like to thank Nathan, Dan, and Jen for discussing this episode and this final arc for season 5, and it's been a really enjoyable experience. I really appreciate all your insights and forcing me to look at things a different way. So thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Always fun to force you to look at things a different way.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Arnie, Dan, Jen, Jerry, Jonathan, Nathan, and Barrett. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.